colors to my phone. Orange Kool-Aid, go good with Patron. Oh, no, hell no, boy. It's still my ringtone. Free call.
My name is Rip Van Wagner from the lovely village of Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC, ACRA, Catskill and More, 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And again, we have a busy show today. We're going to hear several interviews from our friends at WOC in Troy about the unrest in Washington, D.C. and Albany, as more unrest in Washington, D.C. and Albany, perhaps on the calendar this weekend and next week for the inauguration of President Joe Biden. We're also going to hear Magic 10 Tricks Point Never, the 2020 album from 10 Tricks Point Never that The Nation magazine called not unlike a radio broadcast from another reality. And we've got the local news about the COVID numbers increasing and the vaccine distribution slowed, about Catskill Village President Vincent Seeley's surprise resignation from the board, plus the national headlines from the Public News Service, and the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. All on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned after the local news.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
WGXC FM has closed its Hudson studio, and Wave Farms ACRA location is now closed to the public for an indefinite period of time. We are in virtual office mode with modified hours of operation for staff. All existing equipment and studio reservations, workshops, and gatherings are postponed until further notice. Our physical locations may be closed, but WGXE still wants to hear from you. We encourage your communication by email to info@wgxc.org and to WGXE's feedback line, 518-291-9492, where you may leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Since March, WGXC has been tracking every local county and their new case count as the coronavirus pandemic has raged. Every day we also note the number of local deaths, but today is the first day that all local counties have deaths to report. In Albany County, some of the 7 new deaths from COVID-19 come from county officials just now discovering previously unreported cases. But the 257 new positive tests there, reported January 16th in Albany County, is not good news either.
Across the Hudson River, there was another death in Rensselaer County and 117 new COVID-19 cases. Ulster County reported two more COVID-19 deaths January 16th, and Dutchess County announced four additional deaths. Ulster County also announced 155 new diagnoses, while Dutchess County said they had 197 new cases. Columbia County reported the 55th resident dying there, with 37 new cases January 16th and 65 new cases January 15th. Greene County, January 15th, announced four more deaths and 36 new cases. Delaware County had two more COVID-19 deaths January 16th and 18 more positive tests. Berkshire County also announced three new COVID-19 deaths January 16th and 78 new cases in the Massachusetts County. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper that the Chatham Village Board agreed January 11th to hold a public hearing on a proposed local law that would abolish the village justice position, thereby dissolving the village court. The public hearing will be held next month. The board vote on the measure will be held after the hearing, and if approved, the court would be dissolved as of April 5th. But because of changes in state election law, if a petition circulated in opposition to the change after the vote receives the support of 20% of village residents, instead of sending the matter to the voters to decide, it would effectively kill the new law. The board would have to wait another 4 years to make the change. The village of Chatham is situated in the towns of Chatham and Ghent, each of which has a court where cases would be heard if the village court is dissolved. The public hearing will be held at 6:45 p.m. on February 8th, before the regular village board meeting. The meetings are currently held online. Information on how to join the meeting is available at villageofchatham.com. Read more about the story in the Columbia paper. Alila Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Hudson Development Corporation is again seeking developers for the still-vacant 4.56-acre CAS and CSX parcel in the city's first ward. Hudson Development Corporation Board President Robert Rosner said, quote, "We have no business owning undeveloped properties. It should be sold and put to good use for its new owners and for the citizens of the city," unquote. Rosner is of the opinion the corporation should divest itself of all real estate holdings because HDC does not pay real estate taxes. The board is expecting to receive $2 million for the property, he said. Three prospective investors have visited the site, but there are no proposals for the board to consider yet. The Wick Hotel, 41 Cross Street, leases a portion of the property for parking at present. CAS CEO Richard Katzman donated the property on Montgomery Street in 2010 to the HDC in exchange for a tax credit equivalent to the parcel's appraised value of $900,000. The idea behind the deal was to put the property into the hands of the agency that deals with job creation and finding developers, said former mayor and current Fifth Ward supervisor Richard Scalera. Quote, "Here we are 10, almost 11 years later," unquote, Scalera said. Quote, "Nothing has been done," unquote. CAS, the healthcare and home environment products manufacturer, announced the closing of its Columbia County site after 12 years in September 2008. The Hudson warehouses had been largely unused other than for storage at the time the businesses shuttered, Scalera said. Hudson Development Corporation Executive Director Branda Maholtz said, quote, "To be frank, HDC right now is very cash poor," unquote. In 2017, the board did not like options presented for the site, Maholtz said. The community got more involved in 2018 and development stalled. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Monday, January 18th is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and the Daily Freeman has a rundown of how local services and offices will be affected. Amtrak will operate on its weekend holiday schedule. The banks are closed. County offices are closed. Federal offices are closed. The financial markets are closed. There's no service from Greene County Transit. Metro North will operate on its weekend holiday schedule. There's no mail pickup or delivery. Schools and colleges are closed. State offices are closed. Trailways will operate on its regular schedule with some cancellations. In the area, in Rensselaer, Andrea Smith and Dennis Murphy will present an hour-long virtual event featuring two women and showcasing strength, skill, and the loyalty of black women. The event will be held from noon to 1 p.m. Monday, January 18th, with speakers Gwen Wright, the potential candidate for Rensselaer County Executive, Ojuwana Wilson, the College of St. Rose graduate and design artist for the Biden, Harris, and Warnock campaigns in Georgia. You can register online for this at Color of Change. The link is available on the WGXC newsroom. The Hudson Interfaith Council invites the public to share its 2021 commemoration of the life and legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Sunday, January 17th, beginning at 6 p.m. via Zoom. The MECA 6.8 award will be presented to a graduating high school senior. A deserving neighbor will be honored with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Public Servant Award. Plus, there'll be appearances by elected and community leaders from and the pastor Richard Turpin, the president of the Hudson Chatham Catskill Kingston Fellowship of African American Churches. More information is again at the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 20% chance of snow showers before 11 a.m. on Sunday, then turning mostly cloudy with a high of 36, a low around 28. Monday, there is again a chance of snow in the morning before 2 p.m., a 20% chance, with mostly cloudy skies and a high near 34, a low around 20 Monday night. Tuesday should be partly sunny with a high near 31 and a low around 21. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Greene County's Mountaintop Cares Coalition has announced it once again offering training to administer naloxone and Narcan, the saving drug used to reverse opioid overdoses. The medication is easily administered by a trained person. The training is virtual and takes approximately 2 hours. It will be held online from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Thursday, January 21st. All participants will be issued a Narcan kit upon completion of the training. To register, write naloxone at mountaintopcarescoalition.com, or you can call 518-487-1788. The Coalition is a nonprofit organization that serves people with substance abuse disorders and issues of addiction in the mountaintop communities of Greene County. Its mission is to promote recovery and empower those we serve and their families through advocacy, referrals, education, and peer support.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lee Wijeskoog of Stuyvesant, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Congress, in its wisdom, has prohibited pirate operators, that is, people who operate without licenses, from ever owning a low-power station. On the other hand, that same pirate could own, for example, WCBS-TV in New York City.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Columbia Greene Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I am Lena, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Georgia, and I live about 15 minutes away from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
And we're usually joined by our friends Mashuda and Fatia, and sometimes AJ or Nico or other friends. And we're really excited to welcome Georgia today to the radio show. So welcome, Georgia. I guess before we dive into talking about a book, could you just tell us a little bit, Georgia, about what kinds of books you like any favorite authors or favorite genres or types of books?
Well, I am a big fan of graphic novels. If you were to look at the pile of books next to my bed, you would see it's just all graphic novels. And I had to reduce it because one day it was piling so high up on my bedside table, it reached past the window.
Oh.
It reached up like...
It's going to block your sun.
Yeah. So I reduced it. But anyways, I also love fantasy. I like novels. I really like funny books. I love mysteries.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of shared interests in this group here. We talk a lot about graphic novels and fantasy. I like a good mystery too. Some funny stuff as well. So look forward to hearing more about some of the books you like in the coming weeks. Why don't we start off today with Amelia?
Oh, that's me.
That is you.
I know I've been working through Bitten for like months now, and I finally gave up on it because it's so bad. It's really bad. So now I'm like,
this is the book that you started in your senior year of high school and put down for a year and then started again.
It's a funny story. My friend brought that book into the English class I was in order to make fun of it with the teacher. And I said, I'm gonna read it. I'm gonna take on this challenge, and every day I will come back and I will give you guys the debriefing on what I've read so far and why it's not good. And it was supposed to be a game and it was gonna be fun, but then senior year just stopped and I never got the chance to go back there again. So now it's just here, and I thought, I've made it through this far, I can finish it, but it's so bad. It's terrible.
Yeah, I find sometimes when I'm not enjoying a book too, it makes me not want to read at all, but then there's always books I want to read. So it's like blocking my way towards the good books or the hopefully good books. So sometimes you do have to just put that book down, and maybe this time it'll be for good for you. Or maybe you'll pick it up in another 2 years.
My friend said she wanted it back, so I'm going to give it back to her and I'll never have to see it again.
Excellent.
Yeah, now I'm looking for something else to read.
Do you have any ideas what you'll pick up next?
I have a few ideas. I got some new books for Christmas, including a book that called Nick, which 2021 was the year that The Great Gatsby got put into the public domain. Mm-hmm. So Nick is basically based off the main character before he meets Gatsby, which is going to be really fun to read because that makes me really happy. I've been waiting for this year for like derivative works of The Great Gatsby to come out because it's one of my favorite books.
Yeah, I thought of you when I saw the news that was entering the public domain. So I know that's a favorite. So Lena, what book did you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about a book that I've been writing, and it's technically, I guess, fan fiction because this book has like characters that I like in it.
What was it that you said? What kind of fan fiction?
My book is technically like fan fiction.
No, but of what?
Okay, so I never said what kind of fan fiction it was, but I said that it's technically fan fiction because it has like characters that I like in the book. I don't want to say the characters on the radio because I just don't feel like it.
Secret fan fiction.
Yes, secret fan fiction. But my sister said it was very interesting because I threw a bunch of surprises. I threw like a bunch of surprises into the one page that I have so far. And yeah, and plus, though, I think that I should probably start working on it as soon as I'm done with my schoolwork. Because, like I said, I only have one page, and my character hasn't even met the characters that are in the, like, that's in the character information thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Is it going to be a short story or a longer book?
It'll probably be a longer book. It might be interesting. I don't know, but my sister says it's interesting so far. Because I pulled some very interesting punches in the beginning. But, like, I kind of want to read a little bit to the listeners out there and to the other co-hosts.
Okay.
But I don't know what to read at all. Oh, my sister's here. I should ask her.
Okay. We'll wait a second and see if
so it's my sister says that I should read the ending.
Okay.
I'm going to ask her, where is the ending? It's not finished. Okay. So I'm going to start reading some of it. That's when I realized people were talking about me, but not in a good way. I crossed the street to get away from those rude girls, but then a few seconds later, I heard someone yell, "Watch out!" I looked to my left and saw a truck heading towards me. I was frozen. Everything went black before I knew it. Then I woke up in my room. I don't know what was going on. If I had survived being hit by the truck, then I should be in the hospital, not my room. Though it could be a nightmare. Yeah, I think it was a nightmare. And that's all I'm going to read you, even though this is like half of a sentence. Yeah, but I don't want to give much of a spoiler if I actually do put it out in the public.
Yeah. Do you have any place that you're thinking about sharing it publicly?
No. but right now it's going to be on the radio show.
Yes.
But I'm probably going to ask like some of the other people on the radio, like Amelia, Emily, maybe Georgia.
To like read it with you sometime?
Yeah, maybe. And I might ask them for like if it's good or
okay.
I don't know, send a copy to them.
Cool. That'd be fun to read.
It would be fun to read.
Well, thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
So Georgia, do you have a book that you wanted to share with us today?
Yes, it is has a really long title called The Girl Who Circumnavigated Fairyland in a Ship of Her Own Making. And it's by Catherine Invalente. And it is a fantasy novel. And partly what I like about it is it gets exciting from the first page and just keeps you locked in. And it makes you not want to stop reading until you finish the entire book. It's actually my personal favorite book. And it's really good. There are really beautiful illustrations for the start of each chapter. Like, they're really beautiful. I don't know who drew them, but here's one illustration. Really detailed.
Oh, yeah, that is beautiful. They're like black and white. Yeah, more detailed than I feel like often when there's little illustrations at the beginnings of chapters, they're very simple. These are more detailed.
These are probably the illustrations for the entire thing. So they probably put a lot of effort into it.
Mm-hmm. And what's the story about?
It's about a girl named September who's really tired of her dull, boring life. So this guy named Greenwind comes through her window on a flying leopard and asks September if she wants to take a trip to Fairyland with him. And she takes up his offer and they go Fairyland. And it's just a really good book. And Fairyland is a land of mystical creatures. Like there's a like head queen. There's like a beach of gold. There are fairies, elves, dragons, you name it. And the story follows through her adventures there.
I think that's part of a series, right? Have you read any of the other ones?
No, I have not. Okay, then I'm going to check those out.
I think it's a series. I don't know if they're just similar titles because there's one that's like the boy who ... Like it's a long title. Yeah, that one sounds really good. I've actually had that on my to-read list since it first came out, which was many years ago, and I just never got around to it. So I'll have to read it now that I know it's one of your favorites, much like I did with one of Lena's favorites. I finally read that. I think I've read all of Amelia's favorites. Think except Wings of Fire. I still have to read Wings of Fire.
I was about to say, I'm still trying to convince my mom to read the second half of that, and she won't. She I'm very sad.
Would it count if I read the graphic novel, or should I read the novel?
I think it counts. All the graphic novels that I have so far have been pretty accurate to the book, so yeah, that'd probably work.
That would count.
Yeah,
it's a little different.
I really hope they make graphic novels out of the special edition books, too, because one of those is my favorite in the entire series, and I'd probably cry if it ever came out as a graphic novel.
Yay. Well, I hope they do.
So, let me get this straight. You've had one book on your reading list for 10 years?
Well, I've had more than one book. I have many books on my to-read list. But I just haven't gotten around to it. But I do like to, when I find out it's somebody's favorite book, I like to push those books up in the list. So I will make a point to read that. So I'm going to do something a little different today. I'm going to just quickly mention two books that I'm reading, that I'm listening to. Well, one I'm listening to and one I'm listening to and reading. And then mention one that I'm excited to listen to as well, that I just added to my to-read list that is not the book that you just mentioned. So I've been reading a book, which I know is also on Amelia's to read list, which is a book for adults. So I'm not going to talk in too much detail about it, but it's The Blade Between by Sam J. Miller, who's a local author. And it's a sci-fi book set in Hudson. And it's got a lot of connections to the real Hudson. So it's definitely recognizable as Hudson, even though there's strange things happening and it's a fictional book. So it's not, you know, it's not historical fiction. And so I'm really enjoying that so far. The audiobook is really good. And I love Sam's writing. And I'm also reading and listening to Dolly Parton's Song Teller, which was a book that I got for Christmas, which is this amazingly beautiful coffee table book, if you're a fan of Dolly Parton, that is, that sort of talks about her life through her songs. So it both shares elements of her personal history, but also kind of talks about her songwriting process and the particular meanings behind her songs. And so the book has a lot of really beautiful pictures, historical photographs of her. It also has the lyrics to songs. And then the audio version has her talking, which is great. You know, her voice is the voice for her parts of the book. And then it also has samples from those songs. So it's really fun to listen to. And the library's nonfiction book club is reading Dolly Parton focused books this month because Dolly Parton's 75th birthday is on January 19th. And so we're celebrating her by reading or listening to podcasts or, you know, enjoying nonfiction media about Dolly Parton. And on our website, on the Nonfiction Book Club website, for anyone who's listening, you can find a Spotify playlist that has 75 songs by Dolly Parton that I personally selected for her 75th birthday because I'm a big fan. So I'm listening to that and reading that and enjoying it. And then I also wanted to mention a book that is next on my to-read list, which is a book for younger readers. It's a middle grade fiction novel by Kenneth Oppel, and it is the first in a trilogy called Bloom. And I will read you the description. The invasion begins, but not as you'd expect. It begins with rain. Rain that carries seeds, seeds that sprout overnight everywhere. These new plants take over crop fields, twine up houses, and burrow below streets. They bloom and release toxic pollens. They bloom and form Venus flytrap-like pods that swallow animals and people. They bloom everywhere, unstoppable. Or are they? Three kids on a remote island seem immune to the toxic plants. Anaya, Petra, Seth. They each have strange allergies, and yet not to these plants. What's their secret? Can they somehow be the key to beating back this invasion? They'd better figure it out fast, because it's starting to rain again. And this book came out this year, and I thought it sounded really good, but what added it to the top of my to-read list is I read on a blog that I really love to read that they highly suggested it as a really great audiobook, like that you should definitely enjoy this one on audio, and I'm a big audiobook lover, so if anyone tells me that it's a book that's like the best way to enjoy it is on audio, I dive in. Unless it sounds awful, and then I don't. But this was one that was already somewhere in my to-read list, but that kind of pushed it to the top. But I'll have George's book second.
I think I've gained a bit of an appreciation for LibriVox recordings, audiobooks on YouTube, especially after a semester of college where I have to read Billy Budd in a day, and I put the recording on 2x speed and just zoom through it. They've been a lifesaver every so often.
Yeah. I usually listen to things at, like, depending on the book and depending on the app that I'm using, somewhere between, sometimes I'll listen at one, just like standard speed, but usually I'll go up a little bit, like 1.2 or 1.3. But there was one time when I was trying to get a book done in time for a discussion group, and I knew that I didn't have time to finish it at a normal speed. So that time I went to whatever the max was, and it was bizarre. It was so fast. I don't know how people listen to it that fast. And actually, because he's listening right now to the podcast, my husband listens to our show on a podcast, and he listens to it fast. So he's probably hearing us talk pretty fast right now. But he doesn't go too fast, just a little fast. But if I ever hear it live with him, he's like, why are you all talking so slowly? Because he's used to us talking so fast. But shout out to Michael. Thanks for listening. Well, those are our books for this week. Does anyone have anything that they're particularly excited for in the coming week or month or
my birthday's
in general?
Tomorrow.
Oh,
that's exciting.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
And it was just Mashuda's birthday earlier this week, too.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of birthdays are happening in January.
It's a good time to be born.
I guess so.
Good month. Hey, well, I hope you have a good birthday. Do you have anything fun planned?
I might hang out with like one single friend, and we might watch movies.
Oh,
obviously,
nice.
Can't have a big party or anything, but
yeah,
have a little get together. So
sounds nice.
That should be fun.
Do you know what you're gonna watch?
I just got a bunch of years ago. I don't remember what year exactly, but a horror movie called The Forest came out. And I'm not sure if you remember. It focuses on the suicide forest in Japan, which is a real place and is like a major like landmark there. And a few years ago, there was a horror movie made out of it. And I remember really liking it, but I never got it on DVD until now. It was actually one of my early birthday presents from an uncle. So I kind of want to check that out. Last time I saw it was when it was in the theater. So it's been a long time. I don't remember everything about it. It might freak me out a bit, but I'm excited.
It's okay to be scared sometimes. It's good for you.
Yeah. I like horror movies.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a very good birthday. I hope you get some treats.
I got an ice cream cake.
Nice. Anyone else have anything exciting in the coming week, something you're looking forward to?
The weekend.
Yay. I like the weekend too. Do you have anything in mind for the weekend, or just lack of school?
Lack of school.
That's fair. How about you, Georgia?
Well, it will be my little cousin's birthday, and my little cousin and I are so close. We're like sisters. Hers is the 15th. And on that same day, a new season of my favorite shows is coming out, so it's exciting.
What's the show?
Bunked.
Bunked? What is that? I don't think I know it.
It's a Disney sitcom.
Ah, sounds fun. I'm trying to think what is coming up that I'm excited about. I have been doing some fun rewatching with my husband and some friends, where we are rewatching the Star Wars live action films in chronological like timeline order, as opposed to like release order, and then discussing each one on Zoom, because we can't watch and talk about them in person. So we each watch them and then like talk about them. And that's been really fun. Especially, I'd never finished the third one, The Revenge of the Sith, because I fell asleep watching it and I hadn't been enjoying it at the time. So I just never got around to catching up and finishing it.
My dad told you about his quest to watch every single movie on Disney Plus in alphabetical order.
In alphabetical order?
Yes. He just finished Bambi a couple nights ago. Uh-huh. Now he has to watch the Bambi 2 and a couple other Bambis. And I don't know why there are so many Bambis, but okay.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I feel like
he should like. I told him he should like watch a bunch of bad ones and then watch some good ones. Like, you gotta watch all the bad Aladdin sequels and then watch something really good, like The Hunchback of Notre Dame. But he refuses. He says he has to go in alphabetical order, otherwise he's cheating.
It's true.
I just don't get it. How long is it going to be till he reaches H? It's going to be so long till he can watch The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And that makes me sad.
Imagine how long is until he's going to be able to watch a that starts with Z. It'll maybe a year, maybe have that as a New Year's resolution for 2022.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to... There was a Disney original movie, like the kind that they would just air on Disney Channel, and it was called Pixel Perfect, and I remember it in a weird way. I remember it as if I, like, dreamt it, because it felt really surreal for a Disney movie, but I remember seeing it when I was really little on the Disney Channel, and that might be on Disney Plus, and I might need to watch it again, because I remember it being really weird and really, like, existential for a Disney movie.
Is he watching the TV series too, or just the movies?
Right now he's watching the movies. I don't know what he's going to do when he gets the TV series. I have no idea. I assume he's not, because otherwise he would have gotten onto Ant Farm before moving on to like the letter B. So maybe he's skipping the shows, or Ant Farm isn't on Disney Plus, which is a crime, but okay.
Oh, so Emily, pretty much you're having a movie literature people.
It's like a book group, but not about a book.
film mature circle.
But the movie likely started with a story and a script and then got made into a movie. So there are written words. And you have to read the scroll, like in Star Wars, they have that scroll at the beginning. So we are reading. And actually, we've been watching with the subtitles on. Just because there was one time I was watching one and I was sort of like half watching Attack of the Clones because it's not my favorite. And I was having trouble concentrating because I kept getting distracted because I wasn't enjoying it as much. And so then I put on the subtitles so that I'd end up reading it.
When theaters eventually reopen, I'm going to be stressed out by the lack of subtitles.
Oh, yeah.
I watch everything with subtitles.
The funny thing, though, is with the Star Wars is that when R2-D2 or Chewbacca talk, they have subtitles for it. It's just like beep, bleep, bleep for R2-D2. And then Chewbacca's just always going, gah.
I like it. I like it when you're watching it with subtitles and it's very clearly meant for like a deaf audience because the music isn't like parentheses and it just says like tense music or dramatic music. And I'm just like, okay. It's kind of funny.
It is really funny. My little sister watches a show called Super Wings. The subtitles, a lot of times the subtitles are on, but like for the intro, it said rock music in parentheses.
Yeah.
It really isn't that much rock music. I guess you could say it as electric guitar, but it's not really rock.
One of the most stressful things is watching anything that was originally made in Japanese on Netflix, like anime and stuff. Because you will click English subtitles and you will click English audio and the English subtitles will not match up with the English audio. Mm. Because when they dub it, they have to match the lip flaps of the characters because that's all already been animated. So it will not match up. It'll have the same general meaning, but it will not be the same words. And it's really annoying.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, translation's tricky. It's possible also that when they translate for the voiceover dub, it's a different, like they use a different translation when they do the subtitles.
Yeah.
Like they might make the subtitle. I don't know. That's interesting.
Everything is already animated, so they have to match the animation with whatever the character is saying. So they might substitute some words that are like two syllables into a word that maybe means the same thing but is one syllable just to match the way the mouths are moving. But that means like that means the subtitles will not match up. It's very strange.
It's a real struggle.
It's a real struggle, I guess. First world problems.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time for today, but we hope everyone listening has a really wonderful week with lots of quality reading time, even if that reading is subtitles on your TV. And we'll be here next week to talk about some more books. Happy birthday, Amelia and Mashuda. Yay! Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Pelo negro, oscuro, bonita, pero apenas.
chiquita, al cielo quiere echarle prendadita de su mal y que Dios tendrá que cobrarle.
Si se va a tomar, si se va a ir, la llama va al cielo no va a caer. Ya no hay nadie más por ahí, no hay nadie más, sentadita dando pasos.
After missing many meetings over the fall and into the winter, Catskill Village President Vincent Seely resigned. He claims credit for calling Catskill the ever-improving village. Several years ago, Catskill musician Brian DeWan wrote his own song called Our Ever-Improving Village. Here is that song.
This is a song called The Ever-Improving Village. And Pepto-Bismol sunset tips aslant and seeps into the water table like a sewage treatment plant. A rust box swings and screeches on which feral children play. Their hollers strain through chain link fences all the mean dog day. Left at Colonial Drug, the local den of sin. Kitty corner across the street from the horse and buggy motor inn. A crooked mile past Murderer's Creek, just north of Indian Head Hill, lies our ever-improving village on the banks of Thornbush Kill. Powers that be won't likely vote for doing something rash, like plow the streets or fill in potholes or pick up household trash. They raise the ban shell for being an attractive nuisance, so they say. Then they tore down the public library for being old and in the way. Put a wub mart up, invoking eminent domain, in hopes it will kill off the local business that remains. Yet once there was an ordinance that you couldn't build no higher than the statue of William Penknife or the Second Parish Spire. Better. We're not so bad, we're getting better. Things aren't so bad, they're getting better. We're not so bad, we're getting better. Instead of loitering round the liquor store, the wayward youth will enter our state-of-the-art brand spanking new juvenile detention center. Get your kicks at the 5 and 10 12-lane polydrome. The ace of burgers, the rummage roost, or the gloaming old folks' home. We've got the county's largest junkyard, which truly does deserve to be declared an accidental wildlife reserve. And in spite of all you've heard about the underground oil spillage, you've got to admit we've got a heck of a view from our ever-improving village. We're not so bad, we're getting better in our ever-improving village.
Movies on the Radio airs the second Thursday evening of each month at 7 p.m. We'll be back on February 11th with Catskill-based filmmaker and radio producer Richard Sandler to screen and listen in on his film and video work. Meantime, check us out online at filmontmediaproject.org, that's Filmont with an F, or find the Filmont Media Project on Facebook or Instagram to stay updated.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Jennifer, it's so nice to talk to you. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about your reaction to some of the proposals that you're hearing in the governor's State of the State address. As you know, and many of our listeners know, he's not just delivering one this year, he's delivering a whole series. What are you hearing?
Yeah, we've had a lot of sneak previews, I think, over the past couple of weeks from his office at his various press conferences he's been holding now pretty much daily related to the ongoing pandemic. So he's kind of teased some of the things that are on the top of his list. I don't think anybody's surprised that the looming budget deficit is the number one topic of conversation. From our standpoint, some of the voting rules that he has been proposing, I think, are good, although the Senate has already moved some of them, better versions, arguably, than what the governor has proposed without having seen the actual legislation. But I don't think anyone's super surprised that tenant rights, helping small businesses, trying to find revenue sources, whether it's through mobile bedding or recreational marijuana, are the big topics of conversation right now.
What are the league's priorities this year?
We're definitely going to be working on trying to clean up and enhance some of the voting laws that we passed in 2019. We got to finally see them in full effect in 2020 with the pandemic. So expanding early voting is at the top of the list. Cleaning up our absentee voting rules and processes is up there as well, since 2020 was kind of a test run of what it may be like in the future, now that no excuse absentee voting is also going to potentially be on the horizon in the future. Besides voting, we're also looking at redistricting. Of course, this is our redistricting year, so that's going to be a big priority for us. And then we're always looking at open government rules, cleaning up certain rules related to court reform and all kinds of different issues. And never really know what direction a session is going to go.
Well, let's dig into some of these a little bit more deeply. On the voting rights front, can you describe how you think expanding early voting should be done in New York?
So there's a few proposals on the table. One that happened during session last year, which basically mandated, and this came out of Rensselaer County, that mandated that every county have a early voting poll site in the largest municipality. And that was a direct result of our first go at early voting, that Rensselaer County did not have an early voting site in their largest city. So that'll be coming into play this year, which is great. But we definitely want to see more access to early voting. We'd like to see all counties increase their amount of poll sites in general. And one of the proposals on the table is reducing the number of registered voters required per early voting poll site from 50,000 to 25,000, which for the most part would force, for lack of a better word, every county board of elections that currently has one site to add a site. There's a few counties that will still only be required to have one site, but the majority will have to have at least two. And the other part of that proposal also removes the cap of how many poll sites a county is mandated to have. So instead of saying a county can only have up to mandated 7 poll sites, although the new law that passed now says 10, there would be no cap. So it would be however many registered voters, 25,000 intervals, you would have to have that many sites.
So this is clearly going to have a budget implication. Do you envision that even though it's going to cost the state some money, that this is a viable proposal this year?
Yeah, and we have been fighting for funding for counties for these new election reforms since well before 2019. The State Board of Elections is always underfunded. Since I've been with the league, they get a cut every year, or have gotten a cut every year I've been with the league. And it's very frustrating because it just makes you feel like the state doesn't really value democracy, and they pass all these great laws that look great on paper in a press release, but when it comes to actually putting their money where their mouths are, they don't typically spend money on election reforms. The good news is we have heard from some counties that adding one additional site will not be that onerous of a burden, and they'll just basically split the resources that they're using now. So hopefully the larger counties will be able to cover the cost of having to increase their number of sites as well. But even more ideally, the state would provide some sort of source of fiscal income to be able to actually pay for these.
On redistricting, it's a very complicated issue. Can you break it down for our listeners what it means that this is a redistricting year?
We finished our census last year with a lot of frustration, I would say. It was very hard, I think, to truly get out the count during COVID, but the Census Bureau did the best that they could with the resources that they had, and now the states are all waiting for data from the Census Bureau to redraw their state lines, their congressional lines, and then in most cases also their local lines. And they're going to use the data from the census to redraw those lines, to see how the population has shifted, to see where people are going, to make sure that these districts are most fairly representative of the people that actually live in them. And for New York State's purposes, we're doing it different this year. For the very first time, instead of our legislature drawing the lines that then become their own districts, we're having an independent redistricting commission draw these lines. This is our first time doing this. The commission has been formed. They've already started meeting. And at this point, I think they're just waiting for their funding allocation and for the census data to actually come out, so that they can really get started.
I received a notice from the League of Women Voters from my local chapter. I'm a member, a proud member of the League of Women Voters, and I received a notice saying that there were upcoming demonstrations, in-person activities, maybe counter-protests associated with what's happening around the inauguration, around the challenges to the November elections. And the advice from my local league chapter was to not go because it's dangerous. What can you tell me about the league's direction to its members that folks maybe avoid those gatherings?
Yeah, and this was something that came down from our national organization, and we definitely take their advice to heart. It's been a very difficult time as a nonpartisan organization to not be leaning in one direction, even in spite of some of the things that have happened. And our nonpartisanship is really important to us. And with this particular situation, it's very crazy because when we first had our go at this, at the start of all of this, with the women's marches, and then later with different environmental marches and all the marches that happen, our National League was always encouraging us to participate and be there on the ground, and even more recently with Black Lives Matter, and also to be registering people at these marches. We're not just there in solidarity and support, we're there to empower them, to help them get registered to vote. But in this situation, our national organization decided that it was a bigger priority to keep our members safe than to encourage them to participate in these counter protests.
So really, like, the danger of violence is impacting our ability to make our voices heard in some ways. That's I mean, unprecedented is the most overused word in 2020 and moving into 2021, but it's pretty unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's definitely frustrating to have to be experiencing this, and especially living in the capital region. And we work a lot with our staff in DC to kind of keep us updated on this. And it is very disheartening to hear how defeated they sound when we talk to them, either via Zoom or over the phone about this whole situation. It's not ideal, but I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel, or at least I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It can't get any worse, right?
I've been trying to avoid saying that, actually. But there are ways for people to make their voices heard virtually, right? Have you been finding ways to mobilize people in support of your agenda from a distance?
Yes, I definitely think that there is opportunity, certainly at the state level, to be still advocating. It's a lot harder with the Capitol closed, but legislators, I think for the most part, have tried to make accommodations to have these virtual discussions, whether it's through hearings or through lobby meetings held virtually, to let voters and the people of New York State have their voices heard. We had partnered with a number of great groups on putting forward recommendations for rules reforms for the Senate and Assembly to try and keep everything as open as possible, to have the most accessibility as possible. So if you didn't have a computer, you could call in to listen, making sure that there was accessibility for individuals with disabilities. And I don't think they totally heeded our advice, but I do think that in the future, we're going to see more and more remote meetings, and I think it'll only get better from here.
Jennifer, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Last month, administrative law judge James McClemon sided with New York State on the question of permits that would allow BioHiTech to build a massive waste-to-energy facility on the Hudson River in the city of Rensselaer. Judge McClemon's ruled that the company's special use permit has lapsed and BioHiTech will need to reapply. The controversial special use permit, which would have allowed BioHiTech to forego the secret process, was granted by the previous Rensselaer City Administration. And for more on this decision, we're joined by Dave Ellis of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give our listeners some context about this decision by Judge McClemon?
Yeah, so the judge basically looked at all the information the city of Rensselaer had on file. He listened to quotes that Mayor Mike Stammel had made in June saying that the BioHiTech plant would have to go through a full state environmental quality review, which studies the environmental, social, and economic impact of those project before the city would let it move forward. So basically, these approvals that BioHiTech had previously with the city of Rensselaer lapsed, and the mayor said that he would require BioHiTech to basically start the process over again.
So in an article by the Times Union, the lawyer for BioHiTech, I believe his name is Tom West.
Yes.
Says he plans to appeal that decision by Judge McClemon. Do you have a comment on that?
Unfortunately, it seems like Tom West is always looking to support environmental polluters and communities. And a lot of the cases that he tries to bring forward, he does not win. He does not have the backing that environmental groups have to prove that these facilities are negatively impacting the communities. You know, the people don't want this facility here. Riverkeeper doesn't want this facility here. The city administration doesn't want this facility here. And, you know, Tom West has to realize the impact this facility is going to have on the city of Rensselaer if it goes forward, and know that there's going to be a lengthy fight from the people who live here to make sure it does not get approved.
So this decision by Judge McClemon, it doesn't stop the, he's not saying you can't, you know, apply for permits, right? They're just saying they have to reapply with the city. Is that correct?
Correct. They would have to go through the whole planning process again with the city administration and Mayor Mike Stammel and the new planning board would definitely be taking a more stringent look at the application process to make sure that all state environmental quality review laws are being properly followed.
So with the previous special use permit, they wouldn't have had to go through the SECRA process. Is that, that's correct?
Correct. The City of Rensselaer Planning Board at the time, unfortunately, didn't know much about the project, and they didn't take a deep dive, and they